Hi everyone, I'm Justin Chisholm, welcoming you back to the Yacht Racing Podcast for this, the second episode of our two-part America's Cup special focused on the New York Yacht Club's American Magic Syndicate. In the first episode, we spoke to the team's testing manager, Anderson Reggio, about his key role in the team's campaign. And now we hear from British sailor Paul Goodison, who is in the thick of the onboard action as mainsail trimmer aboard the American AC-75. So Paul Goodison, welcome to the Yacht Racing Podcast. It's fantastic to have you on the line from Auckland, New Zealand, where you have been back on the water with the boat after a little time in the shed. Tell us about that.
No, I guess it's been a little frustrating 10 days watching all the other teams while we've been sailing, but it's definitely swings and roundabouts. You get your time in while others are having downtime. It gives you, I think, the first opportunity for me to go out on the water and watch some of the other teams, which is quite novel the last week. But it was definitely great to get back out on the water again yesterday and test out the boat with some of the new upgrades that have been taking place and get back into it.
And these upgrades that you talk about, I'm guessing you probably can't tell me anything about them, but they're scheduled upgrades, or is this a reaction to something?
No, there's a plan in place of the times for things to be upgraded on the boat. There's a long list that goes on, and we'll be continuing to upgrade the boat as it carries on through its life to hopefully the end of the America's Cup. But interesting looking at the other guys, the different ways they've approached some of the different ways of thinking, and it's going to be really interesting next week when we finally get to go racing.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested that you don't feel like you know too much about the other boats. I guess when you're out on the water doing your own training, there isn't a lot of time to look around, is there?
The very, very little time, obviously, was people out watching the other guys and taking notes of what they're up to and how we're getting on. We've had a couple of times where we've been in a vicinity of the other boat, and you get a bit of a look over your shoulder to see how you're going. But you never really know until you go over a start line and actually racing around the same course of how you're getting on. You've got a rough idea, but it's never crystal clear until you line up properly.
Well, now you've brought that up, that was one of my questions a bit further down the list. But how much are you guys missing having not done the America's Cup World Series events, which were kind of scheduled to be dotted throughout this year, but COVID-19 put paid to them? How much are you missing that racing experience?
I think just personally as a sailor, I'm really missing the opportunity to have gone racing the World Series event. That's kind of what excites me. That's what I'm here to do, and that's to go racing. So to miss those events was quite frustrating, but it meant that we got to carry on doing more testing. And then obviously as the whole COVID set in, we then had to rely much more heavily on the design tools and rely heavily on the computers to figure things out more than the on-the-water testing.
So lots of time in the simulator.
Yeah, a little bit of time in the simulator, but it's never quite the same as going sailing. The simulator is a great way of validating quite a lot of the things you've found on the water and obviously testing different configurations.
Now, Paul, I want to ask you about your role on the boat as the mainsail trimmer, if we still call it that, mainsail controller. It is a mainsail, but it's a very different beast, isn't it, to what most of us would perceive as a mainsail on a conventional sailboat.
Yeah, it's quite the challenge dealing with the two sails, especially when you can't see one of them. So it's very different to your traditional mainsail or even your wing. It's a much more complex. You have a lot more control over the top 4 meters, the bottom 2 meters, and you have a lot more going on than you would traditionally in the wing or a standard sail. But it's really, really exciting. It's every day is kind of a school day. You're always learning. You're always validating ideas and testing new stuff. And it's a really great challenge.
For you, coming from your laser background where you won your gold medal, I can't imagine a more different mainsail setup than the simplicity of the laser and the complexity of a double skin rotating mast mainsail like you're trimming now.
No, it's very different. Not only the speeds, but the complexity of it all. But there's only so many years you can hike out and look at a very simple sail before you need something a bit more challenging to engage your brain a bit more than your body. It's quite nice.
And I have to ask you, three Moth World Championships. Is there anything from that Moth sailing experience that you built up that you've taken and are using on the boat, or are you learning along with everybody else?
I think everything is transferable when you're in these foiling boats. You take a lot from the catamarans, and a lot of the learning about foiling comes from the Moth. You go out sailing and you learn stuff every day, and you don't need 40, 50 people to put the boat in the water and to get it all set up. So it's definitely very transferable. All the sailing you do in the Moth, you can work on different ideas, different feel. And I think one of the big things in these foiling boats is the maneuvers. We're sailing on short boundary courses, and there are going to be speed differences, but the amount you can lose and gain in the foiling maneuvers is enormous. So it does come down a lot to the maneuvers, and is a great way to practice the maneuvers in the small boats.
I'm going to ask you about the maneuvers on these boats in a second, but I want to kind of dig in a little bit on this mainsail. So it's twin skin, so there's basically two sails operating together. And as you say, the most important side of it, I think I read in an interview you did with Sailing World, is the leeward side, and you can't actually see that. But does that mean there's two outhauls, two Cunninghams, two of everything?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. There's two of everything. So you have quite a lot of control over each sail, and it's not always setting them up the same from side to side that makes a difference. So there's so much to learn and so much data to gather. It's really, really interesting and exciting, and it does make quite a big difference in the performance of the boat.
I'm sure it absolutely does. And let's start with a few basics. How long does it take to put the main up in the morning? Is that a quick process?
I guess it's not the fastest process. It's I guess one of the challenges is because the mains are so big and heavy, is getting it craned onto the boat first thing before you go sailing. And then the hoisting procedure is reasonably simple, and then you just have to hook two of everything up pretty much before you go sailing. So it's between 20 minutes and half an hour from starting the hoist to spiking off and going sailing. So it's much less than it was, I guess, 2 years ago when we first dived into this. But it's, I guess the cool thing about it is that if it is too light or too windy and you just want to put the sails down and tow home, it's much less of a challenge than it was with a wing.
Yeah, the wings were difficult when it got super windy, and just negotiating the boat into the dock and that sort of stuff. So again, a few basics, and I apologize for asking these questions, but I think a lot of people don't know the answers to this. On the boat, where are you located in the lineup?
So I'm the back guy on the windward side. So there's four grinders on our boat positioned either side. There's the Dean, the helmsman, at the wheel, and then I'm the one sat right in the back with my, I guess, Game Boy controller controlling the sails. And as we maneuver, I run across and take the wheel and maneuver the boat. And then after Dean crosses, we switch it back and go back to a similar straight line setup.
So you take your controller with you on that when you're crossing the boat?
No, we have one either side.
Okay. And this controller is, I mean, you say it's a kind of Game Boy style thing, and I think we saw a bit of that in the last cup. But you've got this in your hand. You're looking at the mainsail. What are you looking at? What are you trying to achieve with the sail?
It's very much like any normal sail. Obviously, trying to produce a lot of driving force in the lighter winds to get you up and running. But then as soon as you're up and ripping, obviously trying to flatten it out, reduce the drag, and get the best performance out of the boat. These boats are quite phenomenal. The sheer speed you can do upwind, at times you get over 60 knots apparent wind coming over the deck when you're going upwind and reaching some phenomenal speeds. So it's the sails have to go through a big range of apparent wind speeds, but there's quite a lot of control to help you get the sail through the range.
And are you switching between preset program modes, or are you kind of free trimming, or a bit of a combination of both?
Most of it's free trimming. There are some presets that we can go to, but a lot of it just because the way the rule is a lot of the stuff isn't allowed feedback, so you're kind of on your own.
That's interesting. And so we could see some different styles of trimming from the main sheet trimmers on the four teams.
Yeah, I think there's very different ways of doing it, and a lot of it comes down to how the boats sailed, and I guess I can't give away too much, but the direction through the water you're traveling and how you adjust to this.
Yeah, I can imagine how complicated it is. So who do you communicate with on the boat? I mean, who can you hear in your headset, and who can hear you?
A big communication loop is obviously the speed loop between myself, Dean, and Andrew, who's trimming the foils, about how we're making the boat go. And then obviously from a tactical side, Terry's input in to help us get around the race course in the best shape we can.
And Terry's location on the boat is obviously further forward from you because you're at the back, but is he a long way forward, or?
He's the aft grinder on the port side. So we have basically the foil controller on the starboard side that has eyes this way, and then Terry on the leeward side that has eyes on that side of the boat, because at times it's not the easiest to see through two mainsails.
I'm sure. And I have to ask, boom or no boom?
I think it's quite obvious. We're running a boom. We find that there's certain advantages that come with having a boom, and it just helps you get a bit of more control over the whole setup of the sail plan.
Makes me feel better when I can see the boom. It makes me feel like I know a bit more about how these boats work. So another question I've got for you is, when you're sailing these boats and you're, I know you haven't done any of this really yet, but boat on boat, in normal racing, you would have a tactician saying, I need to go into high mode, or we should go into fast mode or low mode. Is that something you're expecting to be doing in the America's Cup, even in these super fast foiling AC75s?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's going to be a big part of it. These boats have amazing ability to go upwind. You can be sailing in modes in the 35 knots, or you can be sailing in modes at 40 and above at times upwind. So there's a broad spectrum of angles and speeds you can sail these boats at. And I think it's going to make the racing incredible to watch. And hopefully we get some good tight racing, and you'll see a lot of this moding of the boats.
Do you think we will see much of the boat-on-boat manoeuvring in the pre-start that everybody loves, right?
Yeah, I'm sure we will. It's going to be obviously a different challenge from last time with the reaching starts, this time being focused on upwind starts. But there's plenty of opportunities. There's quite a tight box we're going to be restrained within. And obviously the start line isn't going to be huge. So there's going to be plenty of opportunities for boats to come together and try and affect each other. And again, we all have our own ideas of how it's going to play out, where we've all been practicing our set patterns, and you have good coverage of what patterns the other teams are running and how they're doing it. And it's going to be, nobody really knows how big the wind shadow is going to be, I guess, because we haven't done a pre-start against anybody. So there's going to be lots to learn, and I think it's going to be really exciting.
I think it is going to be exciting. Are we expecting to see the boats foiling all the time during the pre-start? Because I guess if you're off the foils, then you're pretty much a sitting duck, aren't you?
I think if you're off the foils, you are going to be in trouble. These boats aren't quite as easy to get up and foil in as the catamarans were. So it is going to be more tricky. I think the most interesting part will be if two boats end up off the foils on how interesting that's going to be to get up and going. But I think in the upper wind ranges, maybe 12 knots and above for sure, I think most of the time the boats are going to be on the foils and going at speed in the lighter stuff. Yeah, I can easily see that boats will be coming off the foils in some of the pre-start manoeuvres, and it's going to be a race to get back up and going.
And in that Sailing World interview, I read that the transition from the boat in slow mode off the foils through the takeoff and into flying mode is pretty tricky. It's not straightforward from a train.
No,
can you talk us through that?
Yeah, it obviously depends on the breeze strength. The boats don't have very much stability until the leeward foil's actually going through the water fast enough to help you produce some righting moment. It obviously a little bit depends on your hull form and how much stability you get from your actual hull. But until you're going above 10 knots, the foil's offering you very little in the way of righting moment. As soon as the speed builds through the 10 to 20 knots phase and you're getting airborne, the foil starts to help a lot, giving you righting moment, so you can sheet on harder and harder and get the boat accelerating and up on the foils. But it's very different challenge in 6-8 knots than it is in, I guess, between 8 and 14 knots. It's pretty easy, and then as the breeze builds again, it gets a little trickier again if you get really slow to gain the initial righting moment before you can get going.
So those moments must, I'm guessing, in a racing situation, that's going to be where things are going to get pretty stressful on the boat. Is a lot of that going to fall on you in terms of, I mean, the main power to get the boat flying is coming from you, right?
Yeah, it's a real combination about the guys working in unison. Obviously, the grinders need to be on the same page because they're producing all the power for you to move the function. So they're a very big part of it. And then the foil trimmer has a huge amount to play, just being in sync with how much healing moment he can produce or righting moment he can produce with the foils. And then obviously the helmsman has to steer to the correct angle. So it's a very big area where we all have to be in unison to get it right. And in certain conditions, it's a lot more forgiving than in the lighter winds where you get punished pretty hard if you're not quite in unison and have to start the process again.
Yeah, I can imagine. And kind of off the boat, the conversations the three of you have in that speed loop, what are you talking about? Are you talking about those kind of moments, or is it more about when the boat is up and running and in kind of fast running mode?
There's obviously a lot of talk about that in the lighter winds where it's more challenging to get up in the air. But most of the time the conversations are based around manoeuvres, because that's going to be one of the big areas to make gains and losses. And then obviously the straight line speed. It's quite cool how many modes you can sail with these boats just by moving the foil arms under the boat or out wider or using different flap or heel combinations. It's very three-dimensional and really interesting.
Yeah. So who's the expert in that sort of stuff? Because it sounds like everybody's learning these things. Is there anybody who – is it the designers or –
I think on our day we're all the experts, it's about being quite methodical. You obviously get a great feel for it when you're on the water. The computer obviously has the ideas of how it thinks that the boat would be best suited to perform each tack, each maneuver or each transition, and some of these are more forgiving than the others. So it's about basically breaking down the data every day and going through to see what's the most forgiving setup in certain areas, but also what's the fastest. And when you can't quite achieve the fastest the whole time, what can you achieve 90% at for all the time? It's really interesting.
So I guess, James Lyne, your coach is having a huge input into the analysis of those sort of things. You must spend a lot of time in the debriefs with him.
Yeah, he loves telling us how it should be done when it doesn't all go right. No, James is really useful. He loves diving into the data and going through all the strip charts and breaking it down and analysing it. And for sure, we spend a lot of time sat in front of a whole heap of televisions with data running and heaps of video feed running just to try and figure out what's happening.
So, just going back to the manoeuvres, when you're tacking, you're the one who is changing sides. I watched a few of the videos just before this call, and there's some great videos on YouTube now. Gilles Martin Rager's videos I'm particularly enjoying. It looks pretty precarious, that run round the back of the boom. Potential for disappearing off the back, isn't there?
There is quite a lot of potential for getting that wrong and looking a bit silly, but there's a lot of apparent wind speed when you're trying to run around the back of going at the speeds that these boats can do upwind. But we have different ways of doing the maneuver. We can we can cross before or we can cross after. We're trying to make it much harder for the other teams to judge when you're ready to tack or when you're ready to drive. So we're getting better at just developing a way where we can maneuver without changing, or we can change and maneuver just to keep all our options open.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. So you can kind of disguise your intentions a little bit with what you do. That sounds like the old dummy tack.
Yeah. That's something maybe we should put in the playbook.
Now, tacks and jibes, much difference between the two in terms of complexity?
Again, it depends on the wind strength, and it depends on the manoeuvre. The boat's pretty easy to manoeuvre in the sweet spot in that 12 to 16, 18 knots. And then when you get either side of those, the manoeuvres get a little bit more challenging, just because the speed you're going uprange and the drag, and also downrange, just generating the bow to exit the manoeuvres and the lift. But I think we're going to see all the boats sailing dry laps in next week as soon as we start racing. But there's obviously quite big gains to be made. It's not just about keeping the boat out of the water, it's about your exit angles and making the VMG gains as much as you can out of these manoeuvres. And it'd be interesting to see how the each individual team approaches this and how we learn from each other.
Sounds like you're anticipating this as much as the fans around the world are.
I can't wait. It's been almost 18 months probably since I did my last proper race. So it's a long time coming, and seriously just can't wait to line up against the other guys and get into it.
And tell me about the Bearaways just quickly, because they, again, on video, they look terrifying.
Again, this is when the boat's traveling the fastest. It's when it's the most powered up. So it's when you need to be the most accurate quite often. Uprange Bearaways, you'll be seeing over 50 knots in these maneuvers. So there's a lot at stake, and the boat's quite difficult to control. But if you're all in unison and you're all cool, calm and collected, and there's enough power coming through the handles from the big guys in front, it makes life a lot easier and you get through this quite nicely.
Now, off the boat, Paul, what are you mainly involved in? Is there a lot of interaction with the sail designers and the people who are producing the control systems for the rig?
Yeah, this is a massive part of it. There's the control systems you're allowed inside the sail that we can't really talk about is a big part, that not only is individual items, but also how they interact with the sails. There is not just a case of a normal sail with these inside. You have to make considerations for how the sail will react to what's inside it and build that into the design process. So quite a lot of the time spent working with the designers, Richard and Geordie, and trying to come up with new ways of doing things and how to maximize performance. And one of the big thing is making the sail go through the wind range by using what's inside to help it do this. And then again, on a part side, working closely with the designers that are helping to come up with the systems that go inside to manipulate these sail shapes to give us almost the ability to do more than what we need. So we can explore, I guess, each extremity of the box of the shapes needed and try and come up with where and when we need those certain shapes.
So could it be that there might be a team that is able to, because of the controls that it builds in, is able to do something with the sail, a configuration, a setup that the other teams can't?
Yeah, I'm sure there will be. There's obviously weight penalties for control systems. So the more complex, generally the heavier your control system is. So at times you want to use things that maybe you wouldn't be racing with, just to try and get an eye for what is possible with a sail and what shapes are possible, and then bring it back from there, obviously, to save weight and make the boat perform better. We're not carrying around a whole heap of weight at the top of the rig. It's something you keep exploring and you keep going around in circles, and then you learn, and you go around another circle and you learn, and then you evolve this into the design side of the sail. So it's really interesting.
And one thing we haven't talked about is mast rotation, because you are able to rotate the mast. Is that going to be a big factor?
Yeah, that's huge. It's a really good way of powering up and depowering the boat, and it's very critical into the manoeuvres to how well you perform your manoeuvres both in the light stuff and uprange.
So you really have, with your little Xbox controller, I think it must be the Xbox Plus that you're using, because this sounds like a lot of stuff you're controlling here.
Yeah, we're on generation, I think, 6, 7, 8, 9 or something along those lines with the controllers. I keep asking for more buttons and asking for more control every other week, and I get frowned at by some of the guys in the electronics container, but they're always more than happy to stick some more buttons on there and plug some more wires in there and give me something else to play with.
Sounds good. Last few questions, Paul. You're working with Quantum Sails rather than with Norths, like the other three teams. Does this present an opportunity for you to come up with something unique from the rest on the sail design side?
I think, for sure it gives us opportunities. I don't think there's going to be a big advantage to one sailmaker or the other. I think everybody's capable of designing what they need and what it's going to do. We came up with some quite radical designs earlier on in the mule stages, which I think maybe we gave a little bit away. But I guess we'll see when it comes to racing.
And that idea of not giving too much away, you could call it sandbagging when it comes to the racing. Will there be an element of keeping your powder dry?
I very much doubt it. I think we're all red-blooded racers. And at the end of the day, you put us up against another competitive team and we're going to want to go at it, hammer and nails and see who comes out on top at the end of the week.
Yeah, because it doesn't count for anything in the great scheme of things, this kind of 4-day or 3-day and 1-day event. But there's bragging rights, and there's also just the psychological advantage of coming out of that on top, especially if one of the challenger teams beats the defender.
Yeah, it's all a learning process. Obviously, we want to learn as much as we can about our boat and about the other guy's boat while we're doing this racing. But we're all racers, and we're all out there to try and win.
Have you had any time on the wheel yet? Have they let you steer it?
Yeah, I was quite lucky when the early days in Pensacola, I did quite a bit of wheel time. I think it's great just to transfer across to your trimming. You get a much better feel for it when you're on the wheel of what the boat's capable of. So I've managed a little bit of steering. I try and kick Dean off every now and then, but it's they're super cool boats and incredible boats to sail.
Well, Paul, it sounds like you're really enjoying your time down there and your time with this team. It's good to see. And thanks so much for spending the time with me today. I really appreciate it. And I'm going to let you get off to the rest of your day. Good luck in the racing, and hopefully we'll have a chat after Christmas.
Great. No, it's good to speak to you, Justin. Thanks ever so much.
That's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast, the second episode of our America's Cup American Magic two-parter. Thanks, of course, to Paul Goodison for taking the time to speak to me, and to all of you for listening around the world. Don't forget, the first episode with American Magic testing manager Anderson Reggio is also live right now too. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and until next time, sail fast, everyone.